continue to the special meeting of the Jefferson PUD Board of Commissioners. Our purpose this morning is to review with the architectural consultants the options that we have for future facilities. And I think we all know each other. So we'll forego introductions and
Let me preface this. The purpose of this meeting, in my mind, is not necessarily to make a decision on.
No, we can't make a decision.
But it is. We have to make a decision at the next board meeting on whether what we want to do with the Union Bank. There are three options. One is just to drop and say we're done. Two is to purchase the bank, and three is to kick the can down another 60 days. But that timeline is coming up. So at the next board meeting, you have to make a decision. No decision is. Like I say, it doesn't mean you're buying it or anything, but we have to tell them something at this point. And that's part of it. The other part is, you know, this afternoon we have a budget discussion on our budget, which I forwarded you guys before. The bank, none of the facilities are in the budget at all. That was strictly out of it. So this consequence of this meeting and decisions ultimately may affect the budget, depending on what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's my prefix.
Okay. Gentlemen.
All right. Well, if there are no other introductions or anything, we'll go ahead and move on to this. We put this, what we call just an interim report, to the board together last week. Hopefully, I think you had sent it out to everybody, so you had a chance to review it. The last time we were here, a number of weeks ago, we gave you basically the process, the approach that we had gone through, and some of the initial findings even at that time. And even then, we had started the process of looking at the concepts. We didn't get to look at some of the graphics, I think, back at that time. But the first couple pages here really just give you the methodology that we went through. And this is very common to all of the clients we work with that are similar to you. We're doing a lot of work for other PUDs and public works departments right now, public realm infrastructure management clients who are sitting in a very similar position to you. Old facilities, trying to make decisions on do we go this way or that way, and if we make those decisions, what next, what kind of path are we on? And I think that's really the main thing we want to help you with today, is help you make the right choice so that you can move down a path that gives you the most stability, gives you the most options, sets you up for as much success as possible. That's the best thing we can do for you today. Ultimately, as architects, we want to design buildings for you, whatever it might be. Before we can ever do that, we got to help you make a good decision. So the goals here are the main goals we set out for the planning study itself. We don't need to spend much time on these unless you have questions on them, because I know you've had a chance to read through this. The second category down were really more specific facilities goals. So here's how we're going to do it, but what are we really trying to achieve when we're said and done? They're not necessarily in any particular order, although you might say the first bullet is probably, it trumps everything else. We want to implement facilities that are cost-effective and do it in an acceptable time frame. You happen to be in a position right now where we know you've grown so quickly, trying to deal with a lot of bodies in tight spaces, and where do you go from there? But whatever decisions you make, sometimes it's tempting to make quick decisions because you feel the immediate relief, but it may or may not be the best decision for the long term, and I think that's what we really want to try to demonstrate today. No matter what, customer service leads and everything. Anytime you're a PUD, if you're not leading with your customer service mentality, there's probably something wrong. And I will say that as we met with the staff, just about every conversation continued to come back to how are we taking care of our customers. And now that's a testament to an agency that thinks that way and needs to think that way. Behind the scenes, and of course your customers don't always care about what misery you might be facing behind the wall that they don't get to go behind, but they will feel it at some point. And when we talk about optimum workflow and we talk about efficient space, we talk about productivity, those things ultimately have a huge effect on any organization. And it will be felt in some way at some point. But everybody expects you to work at your... They all think you're already doing the most effective thing you can be. There's sort of a built-in belief that that's already happening in government one way or another. And then as soon as you think that it's not, then, you know, then you're under a microscope. Well, everything that we do, every decision, every discussion, I think needs to come back to, are we making the best decisions for our organization to work as cost-effectively as we can, as efficiently as we can? Let's set ourselves up for success for all of those things. What goes with that is that professionalism. And when you're trying to recruit people to come, you came all the way across the country, you know, you came because I'm going to pick on you for a minute, you know, I want to be part of something that's new and growing and is professional, and people get behind that, and you want a whole workforce that's like that, ultimately. So that matters. It matters that we create an organization that you're not always struggling against the tide that prevents you from being your most professional. And that leads to the morale piece, and I see it time and time again in the organizations that we work with. There's a certain grit that comes with any organization that deals with infrastructure. I see a lot in road maintenance. I see it in sewer utilities. You know, it's, you know, power is kind of its own thing. Of course, you have water, and there's more an emerging telecom business. This is real stuff. This is stuff that you know, you can get hurt doing out in the field. And when you're trying to build a next generation workforce that deals with the very real reality of things that bring power or bring sewer or bring water, the morale that goes with that cannot be underestimated either, because over time that will disintegrate and it will create decay in an organization that you can't quite deal with. And the decisions, again, that you make today, where you are, what your space is like, how good the space is — when I say space, that's just everything that has to do with supporting the functions that create everything that are ultimately delivered to your customers. So take care of that. And then another one just to put in there is just prolonging the longevity of the things that you've already invested in. That is your equipment, that's your trucks, but it's also your buildings as well. Once you make an investment, it's like at home. You know, you finally decide with your wife you're going to put that addition on the house or something, and you want to do it right because you don't want to do it again for a very long time. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of investment. So with those as kind of a baseline premise of what we hope to create, what are our options to get there? Next couple of pages, I think we just give you some background. These are all the folks that worked directly with us in the workshops that we've had. We've had a number of meetings along the way. So again, we like to build from the inside out. We don't just come in and tell you what you should do, talking to, you know, one or two people. You'll never get the best information that way, and we had very good participation from everyone. You are sitting on a particular group of facilities right now. Just a little bit of background here. Keep going down. Your square footage right now is somewhere around 16,000 square feet, 16.5. I guess that even includes the little storage space that you have here on site and your lease space across the street. So not a lot of square footage. This is basically everything that has roof cover in one way or another. So if we continue on, our programming process, ultimately when we get to the point where we're designing buildings, we do a much more detailed functional program that tells us exactly every space, what's going on in the space. At this stage of the game, we try to get a very good understanding of what it is that you're going to need, but we don't go super deep yet. But because we can bring a lot of institutional knowledge and experience from other facilities, we kind of fill in a lot of the blanks, and we only have so much time. We spend a good full day and a half or so working with the staff on how big spaces should be and what kind of shops do we really need. Are you ever going to bring fleet in-house? You know, those are big decisions that lead to big footprints and all that. So we spent that time to understand what you are and what you aren't. And what came out of that is about 42,000 square feet, a lot of which is in covered facilities. We talked about this a little bit last time. You can see there's, you know, 25,000 square feet represented in non-heated space, just covering things. And, you know, I can take you around and show you other facilities where when you cover the vehicles, when you cover the transformers, at least the main things that you get to on a regular basis, you're prolonging life, yes, to some level, but you're also creating, in this climate, the ability for people to work undercover for those times in the morning and the times in the afternoon when it's startup and shut down, when you've got stuff loaded on trucks that you want to make the day as safe and efficient as it can be. And when you can cover things, we all know it's better to work out of the rain and work out of the elements as much as possible. So you can see a really high percentage of the square footage is in that kind of space. But overall, that would be a recommended budget of square footage. It's not detailed. Once we get into design, we would fine-tune all of these, but I think it gives us a very good place to start. Okay. Your workforce, this is another big exercise and something we try to do pretty quickly in the process, is we've got to get an understanding of who an organization is today and what you think you'll become over time in terms of quantity of staff and equipment. I think it became pretty clear that as we work through this, and even in your own strategic plan, you talk about a five-year outlook right now. It was really difficult to look much beyond that at the moment. I think in terms of bodies, we talked about maybe one more line crew at some point, but for the most part, it doesn't appear that Jefferson PUD is an organization that sees itself doubling or any kind of significant increase over time, and so the 53 FTEs is kind of where things settled out. That doesn't mean that it might not creep up a little bit, or it might even be a little lower than that over time, but what we're trying to understand at this point, is it going to become 60? Is it going to become 70? Is it going to be two more line crews? Is it going to be fleet in-house? We've got to know those things early on, or we're going to send you down the wrong path. And I think we came out of those workshops with a pretty clear understanding that your organization is probably not going to grow in a significant way. And it's still a question I would put out to you, that if there's something that would drastically change this, it really is important to know that now, because the master planning and the concepts that we're working with are predicated on the size that we think that you're going to become. Okay? So that establishes really what we think we know about you. And then we move on into, okay, well, where do we go from here? What are the alternatives? I know we spoke at the last meeting, and we talked quite a bit about this in our workshops with the staff. And this is probably one of the primary discussion points of most of the clients we work with. Are you going to be in a split operation, or are you going to go consolidated? Now, if you're a much larger organization, I know, Kevin, you work where you've got to have satellites. You have huge territory to cover, and some some power providers are massive in that outreach, and it demands that you have outlying facilities. The more compact and the more options you have to potentially be consolidated, something to really pay attention to. And so I'll talk about this quite a bit today. And these two paragraphs, or these two sections here, are trying to lay the groundwork for you to really seriously consider what it means to be split for long periods of time, potentially indefinitely, or whether being all located together is something that is an overriding goal, an overriding philosophy even with an organization that says, we want to work towards that. And so when you read through this, there's not a lot of variables in your case. I have other clients where there are a lot more variables. One of the biggest ones I would say here, and you're already experiencing it between Port Havelock and the Ops Center, are just the number of trips back and forth. And we got the number of 136 trips per week on average, which may shock some people, but if you just imagine how many times different people are getting in their vehicle or in a PUD vehicle and going back and forth between the sites one way or another, and I imagine that ebbs and flows over the course of the year, that's something, again, to pay attention to. There's a cost to it, of course, and if we just looked at it really conservatively for the amount of time and just fuel reimbursements, I'm going to say between your Port Havelock and Ops Center, you're probably in the 20,000 range per year. It's a cost that's constantly there. And if you went back and really tried to microanalyze it, maybe something that you want to do. We haven't done that yet, but this gives you an order of magnitude. If we translate that to traveling between Port Townsend, the distance gets a little further, and it's actually more congested. And so I would see that number creeping up, and you'll see it on one of the last tables in the report. That we can talk about later, but that number would probably increase just within that travel distance there. But that's just the reimbursement piece. The piece that's a little harder to really put your finger on is...
So the actual mileage between, say, the Union Bank building and Four Corners is what?
And I wrote that down in the... right now you're about a 7-mile round trip, and yeah. I think you're about a 9-mile round trip.
4.5 one way.
Yeah. So it's about 2 miles more round trip. Not a lot. But it's also a different round trip. You're in the congested corridor, of course, and it depends on the time of year for that.
Well, it depends what route you take, too, because they put in a second road off of the roundabout. Mm-hmm. So one doesn't necessarily have to go on Sims Way to do that.
Yeah, to get back around. So that, and you're right, and there could be probably three or four ways to look at how would you break down all the trips over time and turn that into something. The point is, there is a cost to it just directly. The other cost, though, is in just the kind of the ramp up and ramp down point of leaving what you're doing, getting in your car, getting somewhere, getting out of your car, starting something else, and then going back in that. That's sort of the productivity piece. It's a little more nebulous. You can put some numbers to it. But it just makes that piece of it a little less efficient. But even more beyond that is what's the alternative to that? It's that short meeting. It's that quick 2 minutes, 3 minutes in the hallway, the over coffee, you know, where, and I've started using the word lubricant almost. It's the lubrication of any organization to be able to communicate quickly, effectively, sort of seamlessly. And it's something you really can think about when you're split versus consolidated. And these are the overlying elements that are built into one choice or the other. The other thing is just the long-term stability then of one versus the other and having options later. And so that's something else to consider, is that once you've made a decision to either be split or consolidated, is it a long-term, or what are the time frames that you might put on that? And that's something I would want more of a conversation around. As I get through this, I'll just finish this kind of front-end presentation, and I think it would be better to have more of a Q&A on it. So hold that thought. That's what this page is all about, is to just try to give some good background on each of those options. So as we go down a little further, these next few pages then just give you a visual and some metrics on the different alternatives. So what we'll call alternative one is essentially split, but alternative one can become alternative two in a master plan, and you'll see that then as we go through it. So alternative one, phase one, says you buy the bank building, you go ahead and renovate it, and we have some numbers later on. For all intents and purposes, I think the easy number just to talk about today is $2 million between purchasing and renovation. We did not get into operational costs, so there's going to be an annual, you know, there'll be annual operational costs on either side of the deal, whether you're at the bank or over at Four Corners. But we're just talking about capital at this time and getting up and running. So you would be in the bank building. It fits very nicely. It's actually a very nice building, 1990s vintage. And even that first floor is pretty convincing.
It was built in 82.
Was it 82? I was thinking it was 90s.
35 years old.
What did we see? I saw on the drawing set like 91, 90, 92.
Unless maybe that was an update.
The original was 82. Okay. It's in remarkably good shape. And clearly it went through a renovation then, you know, at some point. But other than some settling of concrete on the right side over there, I know some of you have seen that. There's some, you know, modest kind of aging on the building. For all intents and purposes, the building's in great shape. And interestingly, as a bank, it lends itself quite well to, you know, a customer service kind of front door and the kind of office space, and then creating a public meeting room on the right there. We had to introduce some partitioning and exiting to get everything to work. We did work with get some time with the building department to confirm that we would not need to sprinkle the building or put an elevator in. So really, it's you know, as a renovation goes, it would be a pretty straightforward tenant improvement overall. I think you would need...
I noticed there's nothing there about handicap access.
Yeah, well, all your ADA accessibility would be on the main floor. So it would be voluntary to put an elevator to the upper floor. Okay, so it doesn't trigger it just because of the nature of the building. It's two-story nature. So you could voluntarily put an elevator in. And if you had somebody internally who, say, working in one of the offices on the upper floor, and they actually become in need of a wheelchair space, you can always move them down to the floor below and make arrangements for that, and that's all possible with the way the building code works.
Wouldn't it be better to make it accessible for the customers?
Well, the customers don't need to go to the upper floor. So the customers would all be on that first floor, and that's all accessible. That would be the most straightforward way to deal with it. An elevator could be put in. It would take some messing around, probably on right near that stairwell where you would chew up some space on the upper floor. You could always put an exterior elevator on. That would be a little clunky, and either way, it's a pricey proposition, but could certainly be done. But you could handle your accessibility all on that first floor. You would have some additional space left over that's not spoken for. In fact, we were a little bit generous in just some of the circulation space as it is. The building is way more space than you need. You could potentially do a sublease, and I know there are other PUDs who get in the landlord business, and that's a separate policy and kind of a track of its own, but you would need to deal with the additional space.
So, Randy, what's the total square footage, usable square footage of the building, and then what do you have highlighted in dark green?
The dark green is basically all of your program, and the light green is just circulation space,
right,
or a mix of circulation and lobby space.
Right.
The building is, the total square footage, two stories, is 9340.
Okay.
And then the square footage that we've shown of your usage is about 7875, just under 7900. It's actually more than the program was calling for.
And when you were doing our projected space needs for admin, about 7300. So it's got a little more.
Yeah, now remember, space. We're duplicating space at this point.
Right, so, I understand.
Yeah. So, yeah, we were pretty generous about just plugging it in. We didn't change the lobby. We put CSRs there in the lobby. A huge lobby. And so we have those six workstations that are actually pretty generous, too. So between the extra circulation and so forth, it was just sort of fitting the program in and having some elbow room.
Significant elbow room.
Yeah.
And room to grow.
And of course, all the other space to either grow or to, you know, the sublease.
So, thank you.
So the sublease would be downstairs?
No, that's
downstairs.
The upper right part of the building.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay. So
yep.
Having a Starbucks there probably wouldn't work.
No, you chew up. Yeah, you could always turn that over to your lobby, and I would love to be at your public meeting where you were promoting that. Yeah.
Hey, this is Port Townsend, remember.
Anything can happen, is that what you mean?
Yeah. And what is it? Okay. So the sublease space looks like
about 1,385, about 1,400 square feet of net subleasable space there.
Okay, thank you.
And we put some, we'll get to the numbers, but we tried to, put some placeholders in for mechanical and electrical. Plumbing systems are actually pretty good. Buildings got good bones, and we tried to reuse a lot of the office space on the lower level as it is, but we did probably half and half in terms of alterations down there, and of course everything on the upper floor would be all new partitioning, all new finishes. So we tried to put a decent number on it to say if you were really going to go pull the trigger on this, that want to have a pretty good budget to work with that says, okay, we're going to be there a lot. That's an investment to not just be there interim to build something else necessarily. That's a pretty big commitment. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so that's phase one. That's part of phase one. The other piece, if we scroll down, is...
And actually, Randy, I just thought of one more question.
Yeah.
What you don't have shown here isn't there like a drive-through on the back
there
side?
Is.
So there's like...
Yeah, those two lines right there, we didn't really show the whole thing. So you could do a drive-up window if you wanted to there. We just left that alone. Yeah.
Okay, so there's no drive-up window there now?
There is a drive-up
there
window.
There is.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, and so you can continue to use it if people wanted to pay their bills.
If there's a functional way that helps us, we could use that.
Yeah, you could use it.
Okay.
Yeah, we just left that alone. I think our TI allowance, would do, some paint and flashing repair or something on it, but we didn't take it off.
Sure.
Just left it there.
Great.
You've also got a giant vault to use there. We turned that actually into a workroom, so
great.
You can keep all your treasures in there. All right, so the second part of phase one is to make a few other investments out of Four Corners Road, and that would be mostly in site work. And this would be the first round of site work preparing for what would become phase two if you went with a phase two, and that's just getting everything ready for the storage building, refueling and washing, getting the parking area actually paved and striped, The septic system would move over a little bit to make room for that, get some landscaping. Basically, you're setting Four Corners up to become the next generation operations center, and handling stormwater and just having it be ready, pad ready, essentially, for what would come, could come in the next phase. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Actually, we called that phase two. So phase one is really by the building. Phase two is you go do some work out there. And then phase three, you see the introduction of the rest of the program area, which includes some renovation in the main building, but not a lot of real changing around of things in there. Basically, doing some facelift work in that existing building. But we're still preserving the space to the west for what could become a future administration wing there as well. So you can see we've left the crew modular over there. We didn't move that out yet. That would still potentially be there in this phase. All you've really done are those other two buildings. And what I would like to see, and I think we did this, Mark, in the first phase up there, we did a little bit of enhancement at the front door to make it feel a little more customer friendly. So, you know, some landscaping and better signage maybe, and there's something that because you still have customers coming there. So a little bit of little sprucing up, essentially, in phase two would happen there as well.
Did you include any money for, like, maybe new carpets, new paint?
Exactly. Just basic finishes.
Nicer.
Basic finishes without moving walls.
Because we basically took that thing over from PSE and just used it pretty much as is.
Pretty much as is.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's included in this is fixing the restrooms?
No.
Not significantly. I think probably mostly if you had to change a fixture because it's broken, sure, change a fixture. It's mostly finishes. It's more cosmetic. Okay, in what we were calling phase two up there. So I'd have to go back and look here. Yeah, we really had very little. What we were calling phase two. It had site work.
Phase one did have some improvements.
In phase one, we have a couple hundred thousand in there. I'm sorry, looking at alternative two. Never mind. Let me look at this one. So again, a couple hundred thousand in building A is just a budget number that would be spent. We didn't go in and do a line item, exactly what you're doing in every space, but a couple hundred in there would significantly improve the look and feel of the building in there. And I would like to see some of that done at the front door where you really kind of take care of the customers there too. And then in our site work number for this phase, we've got some money in there for the front door, essentially. This is before you get to phase two. This would be just part of phase one. It's not really shown. Yeah. Where we would do some landscaping work and maybe some sidewalk work and some signage so that when a customer pulls into that driveway right now, I know when I first come in, I don't really feel like this is a place you want me. It feels like I'm at somebody's offsite and I'm not quite sure if I should even get out of the car without an escort. That may be a little overstated, but I think there could be some nicer improvements there to make it feel like a customer-friendly way to walk in the door, and then certainly for the staff, some better cosmetics. So that's in the phase one budget to do some of that, and then phase two will get you, phase two moves into the other buildings at that point. Okay. All right, does that help everybody? And then the final phase here.
Before you jump off phase three, what specific buildings are being proposed?
So the two gray buildings.
Phase three.
So along the right edge, the eastern edge, is just a long three-sided covered storage building. It's mostly vehicles, and kind of a mix of equipment.
Okay.
And then the U-shaped building in the middle, like we call it building B.
Okay.
We've got a wash facility on the left leg, and the fuel island on the right leg. The other fuel island would go away at that point. You'd have more circulation up on the top. And then the whole body of that main building is just a big canopy-covered space that would have a mix of racking and layout staging space, room for the trucks and the trailers to come through and do their loading, offloading in there undercover. So those are the two buildings there. And phase one prepared all the site for all of that. So at this point, you're mostly in buildings and minor site work.
Okay.
Actually, paving. Okay. Phase three then looks identical to the final phase for alternative two. Because this is really the complete build-out renovation of the existing ops building. So the blue on the left would be all, it'd be a mix of administrative space and operations office type space. And in this case, everything you see in blue with the white, I should really be pointing to this with my pointer.
Was that phase 4 and 5 actually, right? Or?
This is really the build out phase. You could call it phase 4 and 5. It's really everything that's left.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So everything here, all the blue with the white, that's the complete crew and, or not crew, but operations office spaces and administrative office spaces. The big room right here, there's your public meeting room. You now have a more of a designated customer service, public front door, lobby space, parking area. All of your staff can come back here. Of course, we've already set it up with all of these buildings. And then the main body of the existing building gets renovated inside for office space, crew space, shop space, warehouse. There's your additional line crew space, your loading dock. The old building is kind of hard to see in there right now, but it's basically kind of that area right there. Okay, so at this stage of the game, this is the final stage. It's one of the more expensive stages, of course. In fact, it's the most expensive stage, but down the road at some point. Okay. Up to this point, so if you back up one notch, for kind of the foreseeable future, you're living on, in this case, you're at the bank building downtown. Out here, you're just continuing to operate within the building pretty much as it is with cosmetic upgrades. You're still operating out of the modular and these new buildings here, okay?
And cost for buildings B and C is approximately?
So now we're in phase 3. And this is where after we get past phase 2, both alternatives are identical. That's where you're going to see the same budget ranges for these because they're left them the same at this point. Are you talking about just the buildings or the total phase? So building B, this is without all the soft costs. Just straight up, we've got $100 a square foot on that building at $1.5 million. That's going to be, I would like to see that budget a little higher, to be honest, anymore, and it depends on when you build. We're entering in, as we were talking before, we just have a market that just continues to run away. And, you know, to do a straightforward pre-engineered metal canopy building, with just a slab, You get a lot of mileage out of $100 a square foot. This doesn't include the racking and all that. That's a separate line item. As soon as we do the fueling and the washing, the equipment and everything that goes with that has got to be separate, on top
sure.
of that. So,
sure.
So we're trying to get you a building that we think is something that your local contractors, you mentioned you guys have the elementary school under construction right now. Finding more than two or three bidders anymore in this market is really difficult to do, but some of these projects, when they're parceled out and they're a smaller package, you can get some of the smaller contractors, to do that, and they can be more competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that this is a scale of buildings that people in this county could actually
you're gonna
build
find,
on,
you're gonna
whereas
find
our elementary school is not.
That's right. You're gonna import those guys. So anyway, and then building C, we've got $78 a square foot on that. So between the two of them, about a little over $2 million for the buildings, plus then you'd have to add all the soft costs and the equipment and other things that go with that. So does that work all right? To me, that's a baseline budget, and if we were to move forward and design on that thing today, we would just, we'd try to keep that thing pretty straightforward. And, All right. So again, the last phase would be the build out, and then you'll see it looks identical when we get down to the next alternative. So alternative two is a conscious decision to be consolidated. So here's where we're kind of asking you to stretch your brain a little bit. And I know we all have negative connotations of what we call modular buildings. The crew building is probably, if I were to look at a scale of 1 to 10, your crew building is down the scale a ways. I won't be negative on that thing, but it's more of a contractor's job trailer, kind of a modular. Nothing fancy about it. You guys have probably been in there before, and it's serviceable. And the guys come and go, and you know, when I think of where you want to be or what any agency wants to be professionally over time, it's probably not the kind of thing you want to be your long-term solution, but it does work. It's serviceable. When we talk about what this building could be, there's a separation of modular building types, just like there's a separation in pre-engineered metal building types. You've got the low end and you've got a higher end and you've got everything in the middle. There are companies that do very nice modular buildings, very economical. They'll kind of build whatever you want, and they'll build it in various modules. And so we're suggesting in this that to consider the option of being consolidated, which, again, going back to all those goals of being together and having that kind of communicative efficiency and collaboration that happens, says then we'll do what we have to get everybody together on site, and let's do it in such a way that we could actually live in this thing for a while and feel professional. And that's what we'd be suggesting. So in just a moment, we'll show you a rendering, which you've seen in the bottom of the report.
Randy, cost-wise, to prepare a base for that building,
you mean the site work for it?
Yes.
Yeah, so the site work for that, under alternative two, we've got two line items in there. We've got site electrical, site improvements so far, about $425,000 in alternative two that handles the site work for all of phase one that you see there. And phase two, you'll see on the second page of alternative two, handles the rest of the site. So the phase one site work at, say, $425,000 plus soft costs establishes the parking area, moves the septic system over, handles the pad beneath the building, basically makes it such that the modular building company and the contractor bring that thing and set it down, okay? And included in this, then, we've also done some renovation work in the main building kind of before, so we're still doing some of that cosmetic work. So that by the time you're done with phase one here, you have a nicer front door. You've got a built, your existing building has had that internal facelift, and we've got the modular building now designed in such a way that it feels like, hey, this thing could actually stay here for a while. Okay.
So to have a building that would be serviceable for a number of years, what are we looking at cost-wise?
Well, that's all of alternative. So that's our ranges that we've given you down here. So if you want to flip to the lab, I'm almost there. You want to just hold that for just a moment?
Sure.
Let's. That'll be the last page of the report. So if we scroll down, so in phase one here, this is the alter universe to buying the bank building, is we have the site work that you see done there. The site work here, a little bit of site work out in front in your front door, and the administration, everybody from Port Hadlock is now in some mix of this building in here, because there's going to have to be some reworking of this as well, you know, to make that work. But everybody is together now in this footprint.
How many square feet, roughly, for the modular?
Remember, Mark, what we had on that? Our total square footage handles the program.
Yeah.
And remember, what it also does is it says you're going to use your existing conference room over there as your public meeting room, in this case. Okay. And there's some logistics to consider there. You're getting people deeper in the building, or you let them in the back door, you know, park back here and walk in the door there. So this very meeting would be happening over in that room, you know, in that case. Total square footage, Mark, do you remember what we had on that?
Around 3,000 to 4,000, I believe.
I think it's closer to 4,000. So between the two buildings, we're trying to get to that same. If you look back at the report for crew and administrative space together, is about 12,000-13,000 square feet. Okay, so that's the mix now. That program is a mix of everything there plus this. Okay. In fact, we've got some rough dimensions shown in that site plan that I can't remember what we have on there right now.
Does that include, Randy, the foliar?
That's not till the next phase.
Okay.
Okay. So in this phase, we've really just tried to isolate it. And again, we'll talk about the cost ranges here in just a moment. So hold that thought. In this alternative, You've moved everybody out of Port Hadlock. You've sold this facility at that point, so that's also been figured into the range, as there's a sale here, which is just a placeholder at the moment.
It's phase two.
Yeah, so go to phase two. So now we've done the rest of the site work, just like we did for phase two for alternative one. That's preparing all of this, the rest of the south site for the future other buildings, handling your stormwater. I think there's a little bit of minor work that might happen up here as well as part of that. Phase three, again, just like the other phase or the other alternative, we introduced the other two storage buildings. So you've been continuing to operate in this building, and we've put some time frames. They're arbitrary at this point. We've put a 5-year total construction window on all of this, but that's arbitrary at this point because how far out you go in any of these is to be discussed. What we're trying to do is each phase allows you to stay put for almost indefinitely until you decide to move forward with the next phase.
Randy, when you guys did the bus barn over here, where you're, I know you had a captive customer there. Did they figure in, when they were doing this, the cost of the permitting process?
Yes.
How long did it take you to get the permit for that deal?
So there's a series of stages that we went through. Mark handled all of that. So if you remember from kind of start to finish on, We had the site permitting piece, and then you had the building permitting piece. And there,
I mean, it was an extraordinarily long process.
They were actually pretty good to work
with. Yeah, it went fairly quickly.
What's not extremely long?
Well, I'm trying to remember, by the time we started the conditional use process, I'd have to go back and look at numbers. It was within a year, okay, so.
The buildings themselves was probably 3 to 4 months. You know, we would submit the documents, and it'd take, a couple months to review and get comments to us.
Yeah, the building is the easy piece, so it's, doing the site development. There'll be a SEPA checklist, there'll be all the normal things.
And you do the permitting?
We handle all the permitting,
I like that.
Yeah. Jefferson Transit went remarkably well. By the time we actually engaged in it, and we'd already had a bunch of pre-meetings with the county, okay, so long before we were submitting, we had pre-application meetings, even much further back, really trying to get a feel for the things, the hoops we would jump through. And that site didn't have a lot of encumbrances. We had to go through the normal range of SEPA environmental checklist work. It wasn't anything unusual. We had septic permitting that was its own thing. There would be obviously a new septic permit to even relocate this thing, but you'll want to do that anyway, have it commissioned, and set that thing up for the next many years to come. Okay, so again, phase two, or phase three at this point. Did we do the pole storage in phase two, Mark? Or is that here? I think we did pole storage.
We did it here. Once we get these buildings in.
That's right.
We need that room over there.
That's right. So we left the site. Now, you could pull this forward into phase two as well, and so there's probably an option there to get this done sooner, but you would just be sitting over here with a big empty yard then. Okay, and then in this case, we've left the administration, the modular, in its place while we renovate this building. And along the way, there's going to be some microphasing that has to happen. You've got to relocate your guys. There's going to have to be some movements within the building. Might even be a temporary trailer just during construction for a period of time while this stuff happens. We haven't thought through all of those things yet. We did think it through kind of in a very rudimentary way to say, yeah, this is all plausible. But there's still going to have to be some logistics, to make this work. But again, what we're creating here is additional canopy covered space for additional line crew trucks and a backup dock. The orange is a relocated warehouse. The yellow are three fairly modest shops. There's just kind of a general purpose shop, and we have a meter shop in there. All of the dark rusty color here is really all of your crew facilities, your locker rooms, mud rooms, crew meeting rooms, supervisors, and so forth. and the white then is left alone because I think we touched this in the last phase. So that's just continuing to operate as CSR is an administrative space there. And here's our kind of our front lawn waiting for an administration wing to come on at the next phase. So after you finish this, you're just everybody's continuing to work pretty much the same way they were here, but you've created really what becomes your future customer service front at that point. And then finally, it looks just like the other phase. We've left room for the administration building, and that goes, I guess there's one more to go here where this goes away. There we go. Yeah. So now this looks identical to the other phase. This is really where it's headed. Is we have a master plan for Four Corners Road that ultimately can become this. Both alternatives get you there. The difference is really only the first step. Okay.
In phase five or four, when you're building a new customer service area, where do you envision the customer going during that phase?
While you're building this piece out here? Good question. I think we did talk briefly, if you go back one notch, Mark, this building is still here, that there may have to be you're already going to have the ability for our customers to potentially come over here anyway. There's going to be a nice door and an ADA, ramp and everything here, because we have to ramp up to the modular building a little bit. I would think that we would just carve out parking during that time that allows your customers to come back here and access this. And meanwhile, you're going to park, your own cars on the edge during construction. That's the thing, is when you're occupying a site that's under construction, you have to make some concessions along the way. There's just no way around it. But the pain is short-lived in the big picture.
Okay. Randy, this modular building, is it a marketable to sell later?
That's a great question. The answer would be yes. The modular buildings always have some level of resale value later. The better you take care of it, the more potential you have to sell it later. We don't have that covered in here. We did discuss that yeah, at some point down the road, if it's been well cared for.
As the trailers, the crew trailers.
And that one would be as well. The lower value it is, or the more it's been beat up, you're going to get a contractor who might buy it from you for a song, but that building right there certainly has marketable value at some point in the future.
Looks like you put it in here.
Did we put it in there?
You put it in there.
Did I forget?
Removing cell admin module, removing cell crew module. You gave an allowance.
Where did I put that?
Phase 5 buildings, A2. Red ones.
Yeah, cell property.
Like all you do?
Oh, it's up there. No wonder I missed it. That's right. We had. Okay, yeah, we did slip that up. Okay. Yeah, so that's a placeholder. That probably ought to be down below the line under our property acquisition and sales. Okay. So the last page, or the last two pages here, go back to the report. This gives you just a little bit of a tutorial on on the line items that are in the estimate. So just get everybody on the same page, the top lines when you see site costs and building costs under the A and B category, those are direct construction costs. So this includes contractors over in profit. So when you guys did the elementary school, you had what we call a MAC, M-A-C-C, if you remember that term when you were going through all the budgeting on that. The MAC is the number that you're expecting the contractor's bid to be at or below. It's really the budget for construction. To that, there's equipment. And so this would include fixed equipment in the shop, storage racking, anything that you, and you could choose to put that stuff in the contractor's realm. He puts a markup on it too, of course. We typically like to show it as a separate line item because they're usually things that you can go out and procure on your own, piece at a time as you need, or get work under the state contract for furniture, for instance, that kind of thing. So we want to always have a line item for that. And down below, you'll see the furnishings and fixtures as well. So between equipment and that first equipment line is really more about shops and racking. The other one down below is more about office type space. Okay. I'll come back to escalation in a minute. Soft costs are everything from sales tax to professional services, permit fees, special testing. So we carry a percentage in there for each of those as budgets. And then, of course, you've got property sales and acquisition that is down below line, and a management reserve fund is really a project contingency. But back up on escalation, that's the one that's the trickier one to deal with. We are currently using 4.5% per year as a market number that we're currently experiencing across the board. This is what our cost estimators and our other economists are always telling us to keep in there. And we just have a budget on it at the moment. And we did not compound it in here, but we just gave you some overall budgets because we had to give you something to indicate the bigger picture of something that's happening over at least 5 years. And it's going to kind of wax and wane in there, but even last week we have a consultant we're working with on the Chelan County PUD project that I think I mentioned to you last time. Much bigger PUD and bigger project. You know, we're talking $140, $150 million in potential investments coming up here. You can't just go out on the street and bid it like you bid your elementary school. That's not going to happen. There's no workforce for it. And even breaking it down into smaller pieces over there is not practical. It's likely going to go what we call GCCM, where you interview and hire a contractor.
That's actually what we did for our
elementary. So you are doing GCCM. Yeah. Well, good for you. So you've already been down that road. And to make it more palpable and more attractive to the contractors who are already incredibly busy and have all this work, when you start packaging up a bigger project, then they take note. And so that's really what we're heading into right now, is to analyze that for that agency. But escalation continues because that's not inflation the same way. So you might have an inflation number that's creeping up at 2 or 3 or whatever percent as kind of a normal course, but you have these spikes in labor, you have spikes in certain types of materials, you have spikes in just the fact that the market is saturated, and they're going to say, well, if you want me, you're going to get me for another 20%, and you can't even ward off those things. So we've simply put a placeholder in here of up to 25% or more when you're looking out in that five-year range, so you don't get caught short, at least at that point. It's a talking point more than anything.
And did the transit center, I can't remember when that went in, did it go in at more of a little bit of a lull in the billing cycle?
We hit that at really the right time. I think we had 6 bidders, Mark, if I can remember. It was actually a Tacoma Lakewood firm that got the job,
sure.
And we've worked with them before.
So you find
as well.
If you can hit those lulls when you do a major project, you can save a lot of money.
You can actually do it. The thing is we don't have a lull in sight.
And
what I'm hearing from those that we have a lot of people that we stay in touch with in the various markets, we're not going to see an end to it in the next 5 years.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now, we are going to see some tapering of certain types. Seattle is still in this feeding frenzy of housing and all kinds of things. It's pulling subcontractors from all over the country, to come in. Portland has, I saw in the paper the other day, a number of about 10,000 workers short just to deliver what's currently under construction down there. That's everything from painters to steel workers to, you name it. That's the world we're in right now. So trying to build within that is going to be very, very challenging for just about anybody. And then we have these pockets that kind of fly under the radar a little bit. We've got work in Longview. We've got a new building down there for the transit agency, $2.5 million. I think that might hit a sweet spot of some smaller contractors that aren't playing the bigger game, and we'll probably be able to come in. We sure hope this fall that we're going to get 3 or 4 of them to bid that thing. We'll be telling. And this market is kind of similar. It's a little bit off the grid. JTA, although we had a couple locals bid that, or within the Port Angeles area, it ended up being a Tacoma Lakewood company that actually got it.
And for example, comparing the final build-out phase of Building A at Four Corners, getting to the full building, comparing that to the kind of contractors and work you'd have to have done versus renovating the Union Bank. The Union Bank renovation would be a smaller scale.
That's certainly a smaller scale. You're going to find a number that could come in and do that. And even those guys,
They're probably still.
They're already really busy.
Yeah.
Right now, or they're starting to farm themselves out to some of the work that's further away because there's still not a lot of construction going on in your neck of the woods. But yeah, as soon as you step it up and you get over that $3, $4, and $5 million price tag, mm-hmm. and you go to the next round of contractors.
Right.
So yeah. All right, and the management reserve, by the way, is just that's a number. I think we put 8% on it. Again, a little bit of an arbitrary number. I've shown it as high as 10. That's we call it management reserve because it's a bucket of money that you keep as associated with the project that you control. It's for unforeseen conditions. It's for changes in scope that you decide on. It's for a number of things, but you want to keep that extra amount. We build in our construction costs what we call a design contingency of as much as 10 or 15%. That is because we're just at this very early planning stage. We haven't even gotten into design. We say, okay, we've got about this much per square foot, and we're going to add 10 or 15% within that because we know it's in there somewhere. And that doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. It's there. You don't control that. We design to that budget. Mm-hmm. But the management reserve is what you control. Okay. Some people call it a construction contingency. I like a management reserve fund. Okay.
Is there any talk, Brandy, of us covering up impervious soils? That's something that Jefferson is big on. Have you talked much about that with anybody? There can't be much left after what they paved there at the transit station.
Yeah.
Man, they covered it there.
Just like how much stormwater we generate with pavement and other stuff?
No, it's just impervious soil is what they're worried about.
Mm-hmm. Well, so
aquifer recharge is what it's called.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. So as part of all of the civil engineering that goes into this, any impervious surface, any new impervious surface has to be dealt with in terms of its storage capacity. So we love sites that drain, where you can actually infiltrate your stormwater. First, you have to treat it when it's coming off a parking area of any kind. So that means either through bioswales or a mix of bioswales and filter cartridges. And we've already had our civil look at this preliminarily and put budgets to. And by the time we get to design, then we would look at various strategies. They put
you're looking at that part too.
We're already looking at that in terms of the budgets that are in here. So we know that by the time we launch into design for the site, that the type of budgets we have will accommodate all of your stormwater sheet flow to bioswales or other some type of cartridge. I think we have generally good soils out here at Jefferson Transit as well as here. There's a strategy called dispersion because you have a lot of land area out there that you can work with. We're actually able to take advantage of that surface area, and you can push more water out to it where that would be to the south of your property there. And it would be some mix of bioswale storage and infiltration storage and dispersion, some mix of all of those strategies. Okay. It still has to be treated on the way out.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
So this last slide here, or this last page, just kind of gives you the immediate decision-making points as far as the alternatives go. And this is very rudimentary. It's not getting into a lot of detail, but essentially the summary is you either buy the bank building or you purchase and construct the modular facility. Timing, I think both of those could potentially be done in a year, and that means you get after it and we get with the county right away to understand on the alternative two what permitting tracks are going to be required there and what kind of time frames. Because we're keeping that first phase very consolidated as far as site work goes, we don't trigger a whole lot of other things. But ideally, I'd like to go in and actually initiate what would become the conditional use permit that would be the whole master plan. We just go in and get the whole thing taken care of at once, but phase one is you just do that first piece. Conversely, over in alternative two, you would still want to move forward, I think, with a master plan and maybe conditional use permit so that you can handle the site work portion of alternative one, but you would do that in conjunction with the bank building. Both of them, and I think for all intents and purposes, they're both in the $2 million range. And in either one of these, if we were to move down this road, we would get after more detailed estimating. But to give you an order of magnitude enough to make a decision, You're seeing these in a range. You can see the 1.6 to 1.8 is what this thing came out to, and we bumped it up a little bit to say I'd actually like to see a little more site improvement potentially out of Four Corners while you're getting after it. But you're kind of in that range on both of them. And I guess the message behind that is first cost is not going to be the driver in one or the other. The first cost are so close together, and again, I can get in and we can fine tune and you know, look at various sub options within either one of those. But to get off the dime and to make a decision one direction or the other, you're going to be in a very similar budget range. Then the considerations for other things have to come into play. Mm-hmm. Do we want to be together? What happens if we're split? What's the time frames that might happen if we do this once we've made an investment, say at the bank building? How long are we going to, you know, be there for that? Those are all the other decision-making points then that come with. Okay.
I noticed in your worksheet for the final phase of Alternative 1, you don't have factored in a sales figure for the bank building.
That's right, and that is what I knew that question would come up today. And you're right, there would be a sale point at some point in the future on that building, and that's kind of speculative right now. And at what point in the future, you know, would that happen? So, good thing to put in there, and that would make phase five for that one drop by X amount. You're right.
What, Randy, the square footage options on these two is different when we're looking at phase one, you know, basically. And my concern is we could, you know, I can see us coming up with money to build these other accessory buildings for the crews on the site, but that last big one is going to be a big cost, the big modifications to the building. And I could see us kind of getting stuck with the modular building and the existing building at Four Corners. And it seems like the square footage of these two options is really different of what we have.
Well, there's more square footage in the bank building option.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you've got like almost 8,000 square feet just for PUD plus what's at Four Corners now, or what are we looking at Four Corners?
Yeah, you're at 8,000 in the bank, and your existing square footage, I'd have to add that up here. Well, nothing really changes. It's the same square footage.
You're talking about the modular building?
No.
Itself?
You're just talking about what's left at the
time. So split facilities, we would have how much square footage for our people? Versus consolidated facilities, how many square footage would we have for our people? And I think it's really different.
Yeah, so right now you have at Four Corners, the main building is, including that truck canopy, 8,000 square feet. And then you've got another almost 1,600 in the modular.
Well, I guess I'm thinking of like usable space for kind of
for
staff.
People
and desks and all that stuff.
Yeah, I don't have that in this table. We have it, well, I don't know if we have it in our binder. Take that 8,000 square feet, you know, less than half of that is in people space.
Okay, and the main thing is the modular, and really the difference is the difference in square footage between the modular and Union Bank. And it sounds like it's about 4,000 to 5,000 square feet less.
Well, take out the additional, the non-usable space at the bank. The sublease space.
Sure.
You include that
there.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So you. Yeah. And I could add that up for you here more specifically, but you're right. There's a greater square footage of PUD owned space at that point.
Yeah.
In between the bank building and what you have.
And
on site
and the thing
than there is when they're
right.
When they're
and when I look at that alternative two consolidated one, when we're not making the meeting space any better, we're stuck with the same meeting space, which is, in my opinion, pretty inadequate, and it looks kind of cramped for staff. And I'm just thinking, what's our, you know, of course we could go with a bigger modular, we could go with a modular that has a meeting room attached to it, so we could, you know,
we could bump that piece up again. Exactly. It'll be incremental, so you know, we're still talking something in the, you know, the low 2 million range.
Sure. And so that would be my concern. If we ended up going with consolidated facilities, I think we've got to make the meeting room space better, and I think we've got to have room to grow staff. And I'm not sure if you...
Well, we need to go by what the square footage for employees required, not do it because there's a lot of square footage. You know, what's required?
And that's, yeah, and well, what's required is what's shown in Alternative 2 right now, with the exception of, say, if we wanted to do go ahead and expand the modular to include a better meeting room. Now, that would be one item there. And again, I'll come back to the FTE count, that 53, that low 50s number. Mm-hmm. If if we're thinking that this thing would move to 60 and 65 and 70 people over time, that's a different kind of order of magnitude that is not here. That would be yet another addition on the building. So the program is predicated on the size of organization that you've said you are, or that you're becoming, which is around 53, 55 people. Okay.
Debbie, I noticed you're shaking your head.
I'm a little concerned about the FTE number in your proposal because of your comment about potentially adding another crew. We're at 54 right now, not counting commissioner space, if that's even part of this plan. We have some vacancies, but we're projected to be at 54 now. So if that 53 in your proposal is had a cushion of any additional bodies, then it's a low number.
Well, it's the number we came out of the workshop with, so I'd have to just, we could go back and revisit that in terms of the other crew, which would be field crew that would be in the mudroom, locker room space, not in office space.
And that's where I wasn't quite sure how to read your chart there.
It's been a moving target and continues to be that.
Yeah, and I think
So it wouldn't be unrealistic to think that we might be up to 60 employees 3 to 5 years from now.
Could be.
Yeah, that would be very likely.
I think that's a very important thing to modify the assumptions in here and to know where those bodies are. If they're field crew and they only have a locker, they're accommodated in, because we actually have space in there for another crew to come in. Mm-hmm. If we're adding CSRs, if we're adding other administrative office space, we want to get those in those appropriate columns so we can see what that does to the administrative type space. Mm-hmm. Then I want to know that.
I mean, I really appreciate the comprehensive look you've taken at this and the way that staff has been brought into this to try and look at what are the long-term needs of the organization. And I really feel like the long-term plan is an excellent, well thought out proposal. My only concern is right now it feels like a lot of money, you know, and I totally recognize we have needs, and I guess when I look at this thing I feel like we need to prioritize our needs and bite off what we can chew to make our lives better, make the organization work better and work better for the public. And hypothetically, I've got this thing buzzing around in my head where I think, where would we be thinking right now if this building was 7,000 square feet and had a nice meeting space in it? Would we be even having this conversation other than Kevin basically saying, hey guys, I need some covered parking for my trucks, I need better equipment storage? Would we be talking about consolidating if we had that space here?
I do, absolutely. I think we need to be in one spot. I've been traveling to these other PUDs that have satellite deals, and they all wish they could be in one spot. Mm-hmm. Rather than, it's just like what Randy said about, you can goes to Four Corners, then to the bank and back, and stops over at Sparling, then come back to Four Corners again. How long is it going to take to get back, plug back in to what you're doing, whether you're right there and you just go down the hall and get it over with there?
There's no question that if we're not consolidated, even if it's only for a limited span of years, there's lost efficiency.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's a point that I think is made very convincingly.
Well, I guess I'm not so sure. I think if this space worked a lot better, if we didn't have lease space across the street, if we had meeting space here, I think we could live with split operations, and I think we'd be looking at, well, what's the next most important thing? You know, right now our meetings are, you know, not very functional because of the space. I think we'd be looking at, what does Kevin's guys need? I think that would be our top priority right now if we had a combined space that worked for most of our staff.
I disagree, Jeff. You're missing the whole point here of getting costs centralized where everybody's on the same page and in the same building.
I agree that's the ideal. I'm just concerned.
I mean, that's good business. I know. Why don't we ask Kevin what he thinks?
Well, we're the policy.
He's the guy that's got to do it.
I hear you.
We're doing the dream stuff, what we would like to have. He lives the real world every day.
Right, and we have to take a vote on what we can afford. Mm-hmm. And we have to take a vote on what arrangement do we want. And I'm really concerned about the consolidated facilities that it doesn't fix the meeting space. That, to me, is a big problem.
Well, I'd have to see your big problems. I think you're...
That room is about the same size as this room.
Okay, you just said he can make it bigger. You heard that.
Well, we'd probably have to... two options there. One, you could try to make it bigger by bumping it out further. That's one option. Another would be just to change the footprint of the modular to bring it in and then put some of that other space back in the other building.
To me,
there's probably some choices.
It makes so much sense to use what we've got rather than buy more property and we're going to sell it after we're done using it. They're beating down the door to buy it now, I noticed. I think we're going the wrong way here, but you know, that's my opinion. I've been here a long time, and I've seen us chase our tail for years, and I think we need to get in one spot. It was tough enough with the water when we just had the water spiraling in here and the satellite systems, but now with the power business and the telecom, I mean, you know, it's tough trying to run a business, as Jim can tell you and Kevin, when the people you're working for aren't in the building. You've got to go down the street or call them, and you know.
Kevin, what's your take on this?
Well, I've come from utilities where we had satellite offices, but it was truly based on we were 10,000 square miles. We had five offices. It took me a day to drive from one office to the other office, a 10-hour day for me to visit people. The ideal solution is to have everybody together, straight up. My issues, and these are just totally irrelevant, I think, to a lot of people. A lot of this comes down to budget. It's what we can afford to do. I'm going to disagree with the number of people. We've got to stop hiring some people. We've got to say, okay, do more with what we have. I think that plays a little bit more into what Wayne is saying. Try to do more with what we already, property we have. However you do it, I don't know how to. There's some real tough decisions that have to be made. There's, I think, some immediate benefits with the bank. But I do think... eventually, Four Corners is a better solution for the PUD. There are times where I'm out of the office a lot, and people can't get a hold of me. Where if we were all together, it would be easier for them to get me because I wouldn't be gone as much. I wouldn't be driving between them. My take is plan for not a smaller workforce, but workforce not expanding, and eventually we have to go back to our core values and take care of our core business people, which are the water department, the line crews. They need to be taken care of. So I don't know if I've really answered your question. I'm kind of trying to dodge it, but I do. Consolidation is, for us, our service territory, consolidation would be a better option for us to be all together.
The good news is you got some off ramps. Whatever selection you make here, you've got some off ramps to take some time. Where the rubber starts really hitting the road is what you're going to see this afternoon on this budget stuff. This budget is going to show some core activities that are going to have to be reduced in addition to a rate increase just to operate, not counting whatever we do on facilities here. So, things like staffing levels, those are the kinds of things where you begin to say we got to stop some of the bleeding here and start looking at where we're at and how to stay within these indices where we need to be. So that certainly is going to
a bit about how you make a short-term decision. The question is where you want to be after you kind of move out of this, after we get control of ourselves and where we're going to be next, how are we going to operate a utility? And I'm with Kevin, I would concentrate on providing those core services, just like you have in the strategic plan, efficient, productive, cost-effective core services, that's water and electric. If we cover those first, and we're able to cover those decently with the staffing levels we got, then you can start to think about, you know, maybe spending a little more money on something else. Right now, I'd be nervous about spending a whole lot of money outside of what we have. And it's going to be a tough decision, I know, but, you know, I've always been kind of a consolidation guy, too. But I think once you take the initial phase, it's going to be a long time, based on what I'm seeing, before you're going to take the next step. You just got to be ready for it.
Jerry?
I'm late to the game, and somebody will probably throw a shoe at me, but has there ever been an alternative where we look at, like, alternative one phase one, the Union Bank, but it becomes permanent, where that becomes a permanent location? I know I'm not to split facilities. And then we optimize Four Corners for electrical operations and engineering. I mean, it seems like you'd have these other issues you'd have to contend with, productivity, transportation. I've worked in a lot of places where you don't have everybody under one roof. And it worked pretty well. You know, there's conference calling, there's WebEx, and not everybody is moving around, just a few people. But aside from all that, just looking at the numbers, what's the cost? What's the lead time in doing that? Because it seems like an alternative, too, seems like a little bit of a shell game over there in Four Corners. That one makes me a little nervous, I think.
Those issues were talked about. We're pretty comfortable. Once you buy the building, the bank building, there will be some presence there forever. It's really hard to move out of communities. It'll be hard to leave here. You know, this community will come up and say, no, you know, you've got to stay here. So to move, probably easier from here than the bank. But, you know, it's been discussed. Once the bank's purchased, it's probably a long-term purchase that some way there'll be some entity of the PUD at, you know, Port County. That's pretty well a given. My world, my past world, we've moved out of communities before, and the people in that community want you to stay there. It's going to be tough.
Susan, would you care to comment from your perspective?
I agree with all the conversations that have been said, because the concept of consolidation does fit within what we want to do and bring everything together, but it's very heavily weighted with where we are with our budget considerations. Yeah. So I think you have to find that balance, and that's what we're seeking direction from the board. Mm-hmm. Is where's the mm-hmm. balance?
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
Looking at Four Corners and what we're looking at there and the modular units, and the operation day-to-day, reaching out to, say, 2025?
Yes.
What is that going to look like? What is it going to look like to our customers when they come in? Are they going to be coming into a construction site going, I forgot my hard hat? Or are they going to be coming in going, I just want to pay my bill?
Yeah.
And look at this nicer entrance that is today than it was yesterday. And weigh in those. So I think that's what we're discussing here. So it's a hard call. I don't know which way to go because it's difficult. So I'm just looking at the numbers going.
Yeah,
that's
well,
tough.
That's what it's going to come down to, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if you go for the long term and you want to pay the $18 million, go with the consolidation right away. But if you don't want to borrow $18 million tomorrow or $20 million or whatever it is, the Union Bank seems like a quicker solution to take care of your problems, or even stay here and, you know, fix this place up or something. That's another option that's available also. But that's just, you're going to talk about the budget later today, and there's nothing for facilities, and we're already raising rates. So you're going to have to take those into consideration as where do you want to go. And so that's why this is. And you can always kick the can down the street a little further and extend the union out, or even drop out of the union contract and be jumping by there. But at some point, we need to plan, I think, long term. This is
beautiful facility. It really is where we want to go. It's just kind of, how do we get there, or what's next year going to hold for us? Weather reports are supposed to be a milder winter, so you're going to get less revenues. You're not going to get the $2 million extra we got last year. And we're talking staffing is now filled up, where before we budget 4.5, we only spend $3 million on people. Next year, we're going to spend 5.5 or 6.5 on people. And so the budget's no longer surpluses that way. We do have surpluses available. You could probably do the $2 million option to get phase one of either one of these done. But phase two, you're going to have to go out and borrow money or wait a long time before you build up those reserves.
You probably can't raise it through a crowdfunding website.
I do, as a utility in my past, we do have time on our side. There's nothing wrong, as long as there's a path forward. You know, doing the little increments, as long as there's a path forward, we're going to be here for a long time. Our employees hopefully will be here for a long time. So if it takes a couple cold or warm winters, we do have time on our side. And I do hope we keep that in mind, that today's issues are small compared to what tomorrow issues are going to be, and time is on our side. We can move in small increments, we can build in phases, we can do a lot of things as time, more importantly, money allows. It's pretty common. You have good years, we do a little more. We have bad years, we don't do anything.
Neither alternative obligates you to the long term, remember. Both of them can, either one of them can ride, and then it's a matter of deciding which one would you prefer to be in and why, you know, for until the next phase could be implemented. Mm-hmm. Because nobody can make that decision today, I'm sure.
I do have a question. So if we didn't do anything, we just stayed here, for phase two, or to start doing the permitting and all that, maybe it's an unfair question to do the admin part to move to phase two with some assumption of the buildings end up looking like what you say. Is there an estimate on what that would cost, so that if we were just to make no decision but we still want to move forward, we do need to budget something to continue doing that? This year we budgeted money for you, quite honestly. It's in the budget this year. That is in the budget for next year, so I'm just curious.
That would be to basically lay the groundwork for a master plan, do the legwork on
and the permitting. Get the permitting.
Yeah, and we could come up with some kind of number for that you could implement and have that in place. The thing is once you've done that, the county then wants you to move forward on it, and there's usually a shelf life of 2 years.
And to start it or to finish it?
To finish it. Well, I'm sorry, not necessarily. You can add, if you're making progress, then they always like, okay, we're going to go another year, okay, then you can up it. But to just have it out there and non-committal, that's a little more tricky to do.
I think we're somewhat committed, the storage facilities and stuff. You can see those
site
easy little.
Yeah.
And so we would move forward. I'm just curious on what, if we were to try to budget for that eventuality.
Annette, you had a comment?
I was just going to say, you know, we're a public entity, and I know you as elected officials need to think about perception. So, I don't know how many customers know that we already own Four Corners. So to me, it looks like you'd be a better steward in going to something you already own and developing that, as opposed to buying something new. Because they're immediately going to say, oh, you raised my rates and you bought a new bank. And I know it's going to take money to fix up Four Corners, but it would look like you're being more cost effective if you did that. And I've always been for consolidation, because I think communication is so poor right now that we all need to be together.
Rick?
I just had a couple of questions that I could ask. I haven't been involved in these discussions, so maybe they've already been answered. But for the split facilities option, was rental income factored into the equation?
For that leasable area.
Yeah.
You've got about 1,300 or 1,400 square feet that could have a slight revenue stream to it. Yeah.
So you could probably compute a net present value of projected rental income if you needed to, and that would be sort of a, at least a little bit of an offset to the cost.
Yeah, you'd have to see what the market holds in Port Townsend and who would go in there, and you know, find some nonprofits that want a deal from PUD or Adam.
Yeah, but that's probably a minor number in the whole scheme of things, but something that you can factor in.
That's something.
And then I think you assume that you're going to need a SEPA checklist for either alternative. Is that correct?
Only if you, you wouldn't need SEPA for the bank building, of course, but as soon as you do site work at Four Corners, the thing the county's going to want to know is, okay, are you coming in and just doing a little incremental thing, and we're carving it out, and that's all, it's seen in isolation to the bigger picture. It's seeing the whole project is really where, that's ultimately where you would go with a master plan and a conditional use permit. So it could be isolated potentially to just the front door and the modular building, and you say, that's all we're gonna do because we don't know what the whole future holds. Or you say, yeah, we're gonna do this, but we're also going to permit it within a larger total master plan and go ahead and give us our 2-year shelf, and then we're gonna up it as we go. And that would be a conversation with the county to let them know, here's where we want to go. We can't decide today that it's all obligated, but yeah.
And the do you feel pretty confident that if you went with consolidated facilities, you would not need an EIS?
I don't think you would need an EIS. I think it would be a straightforward SEPA out there. Yeah, it's pretty rudimentary stuff, and that reminds me of the JTA facility we did across the street.
Okay.
Because you're not significantly changing anything out there. You're going to add some more administrative staff. They're going to know the traffic counts and that kind of thing. But it's really an expansion of what's already there.
Okay.
If we borrow money from RUS, we may have to do a NEPA, which is a little higher level of...
Right.
But
NEPA's its own whole world. We're doing a whole NEPA for that little $2 million building in Longview because it's got FDA funding. And oh my goodness, we just got an 800-page report from our consultant.
That's a public process that requires, consultants probably. So it'd be a little more expensive.
It's a little more expensive to do that.
All the tries.
Yeah, we've done NEPA before.
And does the bank building require any sort of earthquake or sea level rise retrofit?
No.
No, okay.
I mean, nothing beyond the norm. Yeah, we've got money in there for a pretty good TI.
And that's factored into your estimate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then is the current septic permitting for the Four Corners area sufficient for the consolidated facilities expansion?
We're proposing that you actually shift that septic over, get out of the middle where it's taking up valuable space for everything else, and I presume it would go under a new permit to do that. I don't know.
The one that you put in there?
3 years.
Yeah. So it would be, again, that's not a that's not a difficult thing to do. We do the same thing for Jefferson Transit, but it would be a newly permitted, newly designed.
I think it's permitted for 50 people.
For 50, okay.
Right, so now it's permitted for 50.
We'd probably up that a bit then, yep.
Okay.
Another reason to know your head count.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And does that septic cost in here for the...
Yeah, that will be in the site number.
Okay.
Yeah. We have some detail behind all of this that our civil engineer put together, a budgetary number with enough line items for storm and utilities and septic and so forth. So.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Randy, would your company be the project manager? Would you be the project manager on this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mark probably would be the day-to-day manager on it, but our company would provide the full service to take it through. And we have a number of consultants that would be part of the project, our civil engineer and structural mechanical, and there's a number of players that participate.
What's your time estimate if we decided to go with the modular and fixing up Four Corners to make it usable? What do you think time-wise?
You think in phase one and two, so the site work that comes with that too. I mean, essentially, if you made the decision to move forward, say, in September, we would initiate the design process for that. Immediately, it would be getting in the county's system so we understand where the master plan piece is going to go, because we want to take the diagrams that we have right now. That would run through the fall. We would get after the modular building design, work with the companies that do that, figure out exactly, that we're going to put a meeting room out there or what. We've got budgetary placeholders, for what we're suggesting is in that square footage right now. But
we would move through preliminary design through the fall, and I think we would probably, because of the scope of that, we could have it out on the street for bidding in the early spring. And it would all depend on waiting on the county's conditional use permit track, and which I don't know unless we were to sit down with them with the bigger picture and walk through that with them to know at what point are you going to have a secured conditional use permit, because that could certainly stretch on longer than, you know, we'd be sitting there idling with documents ready to go pretty much waiting for that piece to finish, and that could push out, you know, a little bit deeper into the late spring or summer even.
But yeah, I mean, a good guess for conditional use and SEPA is like 6 months.
Yeah.
Three months if it's simple, 6 months if it's harder.
I think JTA was on the six months.
It took us 3 years to get a septic permit for a urinal and a shower, so I think your estimate's a little off.
I can't speak to your situation, but
septics, I don't know. Yeah, yeah. That's another.
Well, because you already have a septic system out there, and what you're doing, the kinds of things we're talking about are just so incrementally similar. It's when you have a total change of use. You know, if you were going to move into that bank building and change it into a nightclub, you've got a permitting, you know, you've got a whole different permitting animal. Because you're taking it from a bank to a PUD, that's a very simple thing. Likewise, at Four Corners, you have an operations and customer service base. You've got trucks coming and going and people coming and going. We're taking it up a notch, but it's the same thing. It's the same animal.
Yeah. But part of this study did not include, say, soil sampling and kind of the more advanced stuff at Four Corners.
We still have to do that.
It'll need to be done, but it hasn't been done yet.
That's right.
I think Wayne's point is correct. There's a certain number of just unknowns about how long it's going to take to do certain things until you do a soil test and go to the county and say, hey, we want to move the septic system, and here's how big we want to make it. We don't know what they're going to say, and we don't know what kind of stormwater system we're going to have until you've done the site sampling and all that.
And that's one of the very first things you put in place. You know, I'd be having soil sampling done in October, and that's one of the very first things you do is you get after your site investigation information. We need a better survey. You know, we've got survey information now. I'd want to update it. You've actually got a pretty good survey base right now.
So we actually have a member of the public here, and I'd be interested to know if you have any comments or observations.
Thanks for asking. I did have a couple of questions. I'm just wondering about, isn't the property at Four Corners actually zoned residential? And what you're operating under is a variance?
Yeah, the conditional use permit.
And I was just wondering, would that not make any future conditional use permits a little more problematic for the county to issue? Just when a side concern.
If I can answer that, when you put the trailer and expanded the septic to where it is now, we told them this would be a developing project. At that time, there was no issues. You know, they said, you know, you just have to go through the process to keep them in the loop. So at that time, there was not an issue with adding other buildings or that kind of stuff on site.
Well, so they've already.
I will say, yes, so when we did Jefferson Transit just across the road, also as a brand new facility, nothing there before, not under conditional use. And it was a very popular project, and it was well received by the county, and all went through all the normal hoops of website investigation. Utilities have a fair amount of, prestige coming into the process in the first place, and utilities are offered and afforded a lot of latitude when it comes to being in residential zones, and we've done a number of them residential zones. So it's not that you're exempt from a bunch of things. You still go through the same process, but because it's an existing facility, unless you have a neighbor problem that we aren't aware of, and somebody, you know, you've got the easement that runs through, and somebody decides, hey, I don't like these guys, and I'm going to be the thorn in their side, that can happen. But for the most part, people say, hey, this is a PUD, and you've already got the site, you're not actually expanding out of your borders, and you're actually improving it all, you can make stormwater better. All the reasons are in place for it to move through a normal process. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter, I'm very anxious to get with the county to kind of talk that through. We haven't gone there yet. We didn't want to jump ahead of this, obviously.
Well, if you look at the zoning maps, transit's in a different zone than the residential zone for where the PUD at Four Corners is, just across the street, but they're in different zones.
It's slightly different zones, yeah. You're right. It's not commercial.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's different. But again, transportation and utilities are in every zoning book I've ever seen in every community. They're allowed with conditional use.
Sure.
And then it's only a matter of whether a community has a particular reason to push it away.
To fight it.
And that's often a traffic issue. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want buses running through anywhere. Well, guess what? Nobody cared about that, you know, at intersection.
We'll go through a hearing examiner. We had to do it even for the little septic system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The other things that came up to my mind about the bank building is that it's right along that corridor where Port Townsend is going to be developing its brand new city center concept that they've just sort of released the master ideas for. So there's going to be growth in that area, and you know, a lot of commercial and residential growth, so it makes it a little more attractive location, even from the standpoint of eventually having to resell the place. It's not going to be languishing empty for as long as it has been if there's as much growth going to happen in that corridor as is projected. So that's kind of a positive for that location. And then the only other issue I have is, well, it's inside the Port Townsend city limits, right? So there may be some tax issues with regard to, you know, B&O taxes and all that kind of stuff. The city likes to add things on, as I'm sure you know, but the county doesn't. And then the last question is, I know the motivation behind all this, the expansion, is to try to get people working more closely together to not be so spread out. But is it really costing you over the next N years the millions of dollars that it's going to take to consolidate the facilities or even modernize to, say, the bank building plus Four Corners? You know, what's the bottom line dollars over a 10 to 20 year period, including, you know, $30,000 a year of travel costs or whatever between facilities? You know, taking all that into account, you know, what does it look like longer term? So those are my questions and or comments. Thanks.
Other questions or comments?
Can I make just one comment?
Sure.
You know, when we hired the architect, we had a master plan and an agreement we put together. We had some milestones and some outcomes that we're talking about today. What you don't know is all the work on off-ramp discussions that were going on about what about this or what about that. There was a lot of that that went on, and I have to say that I work with a lot of architects. These guys, very patient, very responsive to all the little off-ramps. So there's a lot more work going on behind the scenes here than what you see today, that they were very accommodating. So we appreciate it.
Yeah.
Got a lot of value for the dollar here, I believe.
Thanks, Tom. They worked well with all of us,
yes,
staff, and it was very educational, very good process.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate that. One thing I always get a little bit confused about, I've seen these studies before quite a few times, you compute the cost of travel, that is the actual cost, but it isn't always the marginal cost. The utility is going to pay that employee the same amount every month, regardless of how many trips that employee makes. It's not going to normally increase the cost that the PUD pays, but there is a cost in terms of, I assume, you know, that employee isn't there to serve people when he or she is traveling, so there's a cost in terms of service and your service industry. But if you're looking at the actual cost, in most cases, it's not the, you're not computing marginal cost, you're computing rate of pay times number of trips. Would that be correct?
Yeah, so let me address that. So in our very first proposal, we had included a scope of work module for NPV analysis over 25 and 30 or 50 years. We do this a lot for other agencies. The way we look at it is you have the hard cost of that, so let's say it's $20,000 or $30,000 and just hard, you know, that's cost. And you're right that the labor portion of that person got their paycheck regardless of whether they were sitting in their car or whether they were at their desk, right? What you have is, if you say that that's your baseline and that's just what you do today, that's your baseline, anything that you can do to improve it is a productivity gain, mm-hmm. which is currency in a model, in a financial model. And what I might say, and to get to this gentleman's comment as well, if we were to project this, I can take $20,000 or $30,000 a year, and just, you know, year after year after year, you could say that at some point you're probably going to hit about an FTE savings in the productivity difference. Okay, because you're saying you're hiring more people. Well, why are we hiring more people? Well, you know, if we have one person in one place, we might be able to get the work done. But because we're in two places, we've got another body, and that's a productivity issue. And so if you do detailed productivity analyses of any organization, you try to dial in, how much does it really take? How can I use technology better? You know, there's all those things. So I would say, without having even done a productivity analysis here, that you might be heading towards something on the order of an FTE or an FTE and a half or something in some combination of savings of the travel reimbursement itself and the lag that you could have. You see what I mean? So it is costing something over time because of the workforce, you know, to not be there. We just haven't factored that in. And yeah, the millions that it's going to be in subsequent phases, you know, unless we ran some projections out there, I can tell you, because of the size you are, you're probably not going to overcome that investment. You're not going to have enough productivity to pay for that over the long haul. Okay, so now it's a matter of, well, what are the other factors involved here? There's you know, being in one place as a responder certainly has benefits that you know, you have when everybody's together and communicating effectively, and you're not stretched out when the times are tough and you're in a snow event or, you know, all those things. You can't factor in enough to know what it's going to look like in a day-to-day operation, you know, at that point. So that's a factor. Morale is a factor. Professionalism. All those things, you know, kind of come into play. And you can't really put good numbers on those.
Yeah, they're all not an economic cost, but they're important.
Yeah, and they could have an economic cost at some point, but you really can't identify it. Yeah. Now, we have other agencies where we've actually demonstrated the productivity savings over time actually pays for the facility. Now that you got to scale it up usually to get there. Okay. Hope that helps.
Mm-hmm. Other comments or questions? No? Seeing none. Randy, Mark, thank you once again for all of the work you've done and giving us a comprehensive analysis, and we have a lot to think about. But I think we've done our work this morning, so I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned.
Nice job, Mark.
Yes. Really
good. Good. Yeah. Good. Present.
Yeah. Work all day.